Our next speaker for the afternoon track is Dr. Ingo Mintz, and he will be speaking of experiences of applying Samba in enterprise NAS products.
Okay, so I need to switch this on, and yes. I can be heard. Very good. So thank you very much for the introduction. So thanks for joining even after lunch. So for the shortened lunch period, so thank you that you're coming here on time. All right, so I'd like to talk a little bit about what we experienced when we actually are putting Samba into the IBM products, Sonas, and a store-wise mid-range box. A little bit introduction to myself. So I'm currently the team lead for the SMB stack in those two products I will just show you. That means I'm responsible for making plans to see when we can get which features into the product, to talk with the developers, to talk with tests, to talk with support, to make sure that everyone understands what the Samba team is actually delivering and bringing to the platform. This job also includes to try to get support requests from customers into the development team once they have passed the level 1 to 3 and couldn't have been resolved there. And so at the end of the day, to make sure that we have Samba and a good version for the products I'm about to show. So I would like to go through a couple of challenges we had like to show which contributions actually resulted from these challenges. So first of all, some people already might know, but I'd like to just give a little overview where actually Samba is employed and which products. So what are the typical customer use cases we see out there? And then a couple of contributions and changes we made to Samba, and obviously some outlook. What are the next steps to give some idea where we think are the next priorities with respect to Samba development. All right, so these are the two products. So obviously IBM NAS is a little bit more than just these two products, but those are the two products that actually employ Samba. So the first one started about 5 to 6 years ago. Was Sonas. It's supposed to be an enterprise scale-out NAS, so customers normally have several of such racks with a lot of storage and a lot of nodes in there, actually serving GPFS NSDs and obviously the file protocols. So I think there is a vast amount of information on that, but if you need more details, let me know. So the important thing is it's clustered and it's supposed to scale out, which is the reason why we actually need good performance, good scale out capabilities. And here, so on the other hand, we have the V7000 Unified. So it's a product released by the StoreWise brand inside IBM. So it's originally this should be not Sonas but StoreWise V7000 Unified. It's aimed at the mid-range market and. From a Samba perspective, actually it's the same architecture. We have a cluster and we have GPFS underneath. The difference is that obviously we just have two nodes. So these are the top two nodes, X-series machines, serving the file protocols. So we have a cluster of size 2 and that's it. Whereas this can scale up to, I think, 32 interface nodes and a couple of, I think, same amount of backend nodes. So this is aimed at the enterprise market, at the mid-range market. For both, obviously, we have active-active clustering based on Samba and CTDB. So for both, we have cross-protocol integration based on GPFS with the other protocols that are being served by these appliances. That means we are interacting with NFS, HTTP, FTP, SCP. And yeah, I already said that obviously we are based on GPFS. So typical use cases, one of the use cases we already discussed this morning, which was software build on SIF shares. So obviously home folders in enterprises and education, public. So certain cities like to offer public clouds to their citizens, or whether it's university educational institutes. Obviously, project folders for engineering teams. So genomic sequencing is one of the use cases for Sonos, because you have the ability to really scale out to this vast amount of data that is created. Most sequencers I've come across so far are based on Windows. That means there are Windows machines in these appliances that actually store data via SMB. Normally, compute nodes then are connected via NFS. Obviously, file server consolidation, so at a large university where each department is currently serving or providing its own file server, we see the trend actually to consolidate this. I mentioned private clouds already. And the expectations actually are ranging. So this is the interesting thing. So on the one hand side, there are customers who are assumed to Windows file server, and they expect things exactly to behave like Windows does. We've come across some examples where we had to tweak a couple of things in Zamba to make this happen. On the other hand, there are people that got to know that Zamba is inside, and they tell us, oh, well, I have a special Zamba config already. Can we apply this setting and that setting? And obviously, one of the previous talks already mentioned that there's a lot of documentation around, so on blogs, on forums, and sometimes we really have to deal with these things and discuss with customers why it's not a good idea to go with this setting, or why actually certain settings are not necessary. So basically, these are the areas where we deal with. So we have Zamba on various nodes. Obviously, we have for clustering CTDB. And so obviously, it sips and files, SMB file serving, as well as the side protocols with MMC. That's one of our focus areas. Obviously, ID mapping and authentication is a big task, because if you come into these customers, normally they have the infrastructure with, I don't know, either LDAP or Active Directory set up. So we need to take care of that. We need to do the ID mapping. That means managing the Windows SIDs and get them somehow reliably to user IDs and group IDs, and keep this consistent. Obviously, antivirus is a subject, and all the clustering stuff. That means below here we have GPFS, which is a POSIX file system. So we need to map somehow the Windows world to the underlying characteristics, and as described here. So CTDB is part of it. So it means things that extend or go beyond the normal POSIX interfaces go into CTDB, like locks, byte range locks, share modes, and things like that, which need to be handled here on that layer. And so Martin gave a talk this morning on the IP address management, monitoring and failover. That's also, I guess, for historic reasons, part of CTDB. So this is the big area. Those are the target areas where we actually work on. Okay, so now a couple of examples. So especially for the smaller boxes, for the mid-range box, a lot of people are accustomed to Windows tools to actually manage the system. And so obviously the MMC snap-in is an application that people are trying to use. And actually Sonos originally, and then V7000 as well, just supported listing export and changing export permissions. So actually, we made the remaining features work, and other improvements made include scaling. So when we tried actually to list 10,000s of sessions, actually we noticed that there is room for improvement on the Zamba side. So basically, when we started, we had to do number of session times to traverse the session TDB. And actually, this was reduced to a single traversal. And also, the traversals in CTDB for listing the shares reduced from the number of shares actually to one, so that we have one pass through the database and collect all the information instead of passing again and again until we have the right information available. So actually, I did like to bring numbers, but unfortunately, I haven't got it when I checked the results. So these have not been generated. So how much improvement that actually made, but reducing the order of magnitude. So we should see a good improvement here, really, to allow listing shares sessions and also the option files, open files. And what was also missing, we found that the client-side caching policy, which can be set through the MMC, was not handled correctly on the Zamba side. So we have patches to fix that also. ACLs is another big topic, and Alexander will give a talk directly after this one on ACLs. So if you're interested in this, you can stay and take a look at that in detail. This is about Windows compatibility. So people used to Windows compliant file servers like these check marks, and so in this case it was the university who actually insisted on being able to use the Docker protected flag. So this was a feature, or actually the question is, where do we actually start? And obviously it should go somewhere in GPFS. You mean the duckle with the helmet? Yeah. So I missed that one. Yeah, you're right. That means basically Alexander took the work and actually put the bridge between the Windows client on this side and GPFS, so that we actually can store this flag and all the others, ACL flags, so that finally this will work in the next version of Sonas and V7000 unified. Next thing that didn't really work, and again, there was a large university who noted that. So once people actually remove all the ACLs from a file, actually from a directory, for files it works, but from a directory, they cannot access it again. So Windows actually allows you to re-add ACEs. Also means access control entries. When you're the owner, POSIX with the NFS V4 ACLs wouldn't let you. So that means this is especially bad if you have a huge amount of users, like a university, when every student calls every day and say, well, I locked out my own files again. Can you please re-give me access? So Windows does some nice warnings in here, which are obviously, they're not completely correct for using Zamba on top of GPFS, because once you have removed all access control entries, actually you're done with that folder. You cannot access it again unless someone re-adds, that means basically root re-adds an entry for you that you're allowed to add the file. So this also got fixed. That means we need to enhance the privileges of the process actually doing that. That means we need to figure out, is the user actually the owner of the folder, and should he be allowed to modify the ACLs even if they are empty. So this is also a set of patches that will come. A third improvement on ACLs. So we noticed that there are certain mappings necessary from the Windows ACEs to NFS V4 ACEs. And under certain circumstances, it might happen or can happen that a file created in a folder actually belongs to A, as it's supposed to be. But if someone else drops in here through inheritance, the ownership might change, what of course is not intended here. And this is related to creator owner, an ACE type, which also was not supported by Zamba and GPFS previously. The reason is because the mapping for a normal user access control entry looks on the NFS V4 side like something like a creator owner entry. So obviously this got cleaned up and fixed, and this will result in a new ACL mode called NFS mode simple. Which basically means that the ACEs are not mapped to special entries on the NFSv4 side, but really to simple entries. That means the names of the users will appear in the list of the ACEs instead of using a user or an owner and then special entries. Performance and stability. So obviously, from Sonar scale-out case, performance and stability is a big topic for us. And Sven pointed out in the keynote where we're actually heading. And so obviously, we try to keep up and get there. And I'm not quite sure who of you has tried to run Zamba with 20,000 connections on a box. So there might be some room for improvement. So how are we attacking this? So basically, obviously there are benchmarks like SpecSFS, FSCT, and so on, which we are using and which we are trying to run stably and drive the system to its limits. And at the other hand, we have homegrown test cases where the target is not really to reach a certain number, but really to try as many connections as possible and to see how and where we break. Or if we break, actually. I wrote thousands of connections. So even commands that look rather easy, like PS at the beginning, if you do a PS when you have 10,000 Zamba connections, you get a quite long list. And if you do this often for monitoring, it might even impact somehow system performance. So. We identified lots of these things that actually are unnecessary and that might be actually inhibitors or might be impacting performance when we really scale out. Some of these patches that actually resulted from this work. So first of all, there's a replacement of F-control logs by robust user space mutexes. So thanks for Volker for the idea and implementation. Basically, what we noticed.
It was born in cooperation with this guy over
here. Okay, and thanks also. So basically, it means we noticed that we are doing lots of locking. That means lots of F control locks, and in the kernel, basically things boil down to a single spin lock, where we noted lots of contention. So the idea was really to get rid of all this F control locking. And to do things in user space in a more distributed manner. And so that finally ended up with mutexes for accessing the locks in the TDBs. So this actually was a big step forward. So this was obviously applied to the non-persistent TDBs. We had mutexes and also for the local GAN cache. So for certain workloads, we also noted that we still generate lots of F-control logs. So the idea was to get rid of all this stuff and to use mutexes here as well. The ones who have actually listened to Amitay this morning, there was a lot of improvements going on the CTDB layer, which is good because then these improvements will actually benefit every protocol. That means whether it's SMB1, 2 or 3 at the end of the day.
That is actually TDB, not CDB. Fourth point. Third and fourth, that's TDB, that has nothing to do with CDB.
Okay. Yeah, so I didn't really order that. So I just put stuff together as I found it in the release log. Yeah, this was also something that we noticed that actually in the TDBs there is a free list for the records to be freed or to be reused with new records need to be generated, and so Volker came up with the idea of not just looking at this list when new records need to be created, but also take a look at dead records in the other hash chains. So that means actually it's a parallelization of looking for new records. Or for records to be reused for new records. And so this also brought a tremendous speed up because we also avoided contention on the single spin lock for the free list. Then for another workload, especially when you copy a big chunk of small files, actually we noted that we do a lot of lookups of ID maps. And so when you just unpack a big chunk of files and you have the same ACEs on all of these files, we could do better caching them. So that means we don't need to look up the ID mappings from the GenCache TDB all the time, but we really had those things in memory and did a small buffer for remembering. And this actually, for that certain workload, doubled the performance we could get. So small change, but a big improvement. Obviously, another thing, we looked at the create path and tried actually to reorder work in order to reduce the number of accesses to the locking TDB, because for the big workloads, we noticed the locking TDB, where the share nodes are stored, that's always the critical one. So if there is contention, that's most of the time the locking TDB. So reducing the number of accesses to that TDB is a good idea. And finally, the stuff that Amitai showed this morning, a lot of improvements on the CTDB layer with respect to memory management, socket handling, event scheduling, and the reduction of forks. So this also brought a vast amount of improvements. So I have some sample charts here from our scale-out testing. So basically, what we're trying to do using the Swift test appliance here is on a two-node system, for example, ramp up to 10,000 connections rather quickly or as quickly as possible, and then stay on that line and do some workload and obviously see what happens. So it should look like this one. From this sample I took, when we tried the same thing with 15,000 connections, obviously we got stuck here. Most probably due to the reasons that Amitai explained this morning. So we get lots of traffic on the TDBs, we are on the scheduler within CTDB, and finally actually run into timeouts. So then you can see that actually these messages pile up, and this is what we can show here. So there are a certain number of messages extracted from syslog. So we have the number of SMBDs up here, so it went in this case from 0 to 7,000. That means we are slowly ramping up. Once we have reached this limit here, we actually start seeing an increasing number of messages of the type that Amitai explained this morning. That means DB fetch log took a couple of seconds, or trying to get a log took unexpectedly long. There again, a number of seconds after that. And obviously, when you see we are ramping up and at a certain amount of connections, these numbers pile up. The test engine runs into timeouts, aborts connections, and we are dropping to some lower limits, which we are actually able to maintain. So that chart is the same thing, just plotting the number of seconds presented on these log messages. So it starts rather slowly, so here logs takes 10 seconds and it goes up to 70 seconds. And as Amitai had explained this morning, so we had vacuums running intervals of, I think, a timeout of 120 seconds until we interrupt a vacuum run. And yeah, so these things now should all be gone, or at least improved dramatically, so that for the next releases we will see much better stability and with respect to these mechanisms. Different topic, deterministic ID mapping. So obviously it's awkward to have some Windows ID on an Active Directory, and then you need to go down and finally generate user IDs and group IDs on one box. So the use case here is, so if customer buys the first box and does not set up as a view, but relies on some internal ID mapping mechanism, and he buys a second box later and uses the same or different mechanism that generates different user IDs, obviously then it's hard to copy files over here without certain remappings that need to be going on. Other use cases than buying boxes one after the other is people just don't like SFU. So they have set up the Windows Active Directory controllers, and they don't want to mess around with user IDs in addition to that. Or if you replicate files across using the Active Cloud engine or async replication, you also need to take care of the user IDs so that a user which is user 1000 over here actually is user 1000 over there. Or you need to put in a certain mapping that the ownership of files does not change when you move the files. And so how actually this got solved is an approach I just briefly sketched out here in the bottom. So WinBind actually now supports Autorit, which is an ID mapping scheme that actually algorithmically determines from a SID the mapping. So basically it takes the final part or the last part of the SID, the RID, and maps it to a certain range. That means start of the range plus the RID is actually the user ID that is generated. So this is, and for each domain, you are actually generating a certain range. So this actually solves the issue of being deterministic within a range. But when you create ranges as the users approach the file server, the order of the domains might change. So the question is, how do you get this into a deterministic manner? And so currently, the only solution feasible here, if you really allow arbitrary access on both sides, is some time to do a replication of the ID mapping setup. That means not of the mappings itself, but of the setup of the ranges. Basically results in the order of as domains. In order to make this actually successful, you need to make sure that users don't access these two machines independently in a different order, as far as the domains are concerned, on both sides. And we need one of these machines read-only, which is called the slave, and one is the master. That means new domains which get added need to be added on the master side, and then the domain settings need to be replicated to the slave side so that the same order of domains is actually generated there and that the ranges defined for Autorit ID mapping are actually in the same order on both machines. Yeah, there will be also some GUI for that. I just put it up to sketch the idea of this Autorit. So it's actually a one-to-one mapping to the underlying config option in the SMBconf or the registry. So you define a range from a lower bound to an upper bound, and you say a range is that large. That means this it's 100,000, and you have a couple of ranges starting at that ID, ending up at that ID, and those are the ranges for the domains which actually will be added. And this is on the master side, and on the slave side, there's nothing to configure because the slave side gets the replicated settings from the master side. It should. I mean, so far we just have it in test, so it's not released yet. It's announced. Yes. Okay.
I played around with it and I was confused with it.
Okay. So we can discuss afterwards where the issues are. Some further improvements we actually went through. I'd just like to list here the S-channel patches by Stefan Metzmacher. So what happens in larger environments when you actually start connecting with multiple WinBind children to a domain is that each of these children actually starts negotiating secrets, a secure channel with the active domain controller. And so previously, actually, these different children could actually, so one of the children could actually change a secret, and then the connection was aborted for the others, which actually is not that dangerous because you actually then need to reestablish a new connection. But for high scale-out workloads, actually, it's also impacting performance. So there's a great patch set from or large batch set from Stefan Metzmacher that actually is storing and managing the secret negotiated in the TDB so that all the WinBind connections can use the same secret. And we see less connection aborts to the domain controller after this change. Then quota, so GPFS supports file sets. So we also had to bring in the file set quota, and the quota computation, so that when users actually see or try to figure out how much space is left for them, that not just the user quotas and the file system quotas are taken into consideration, but that also the file set quotas are also considered. Snapshot shadow copies are integrated with GPFS. We gave a better control for HSM integration. So there was a customer that actually didn't want files automatically to be recalled from tape. So they just wanted administrator go in there and trigger a recall from tape, but not general users. So for files which are offline, actually there's a flag where you control whether you want to allow a user to be able to recall, to trigger recalls from tape or not. And finally, there's the RFC 2307 module, which allows you to get ID maps from LDAP while authentication still is done against Active Directory in that case. That has also been added. Okay, big topic, SMB3. I think it was already touched in a special call, talk by Michael Adam. So obviously we identified, I think those are obvious, those features which will be required to really the high performance data center workloads. So which is multi-channel, RDMA, the witness protocol, persistent file handles, directory releasing, and the support for the storage features. Obviously Zamba is not there, but the journey has started as Michael Adam has pointed out. So there is some initial work to figure out what needs to be done, how it needs to be done. Some big advancements already have been done in the area to lay the foundation for witness with the asynchronous RPC server. So this is work done by Stefan Metzmacher. And Zamba already supports some features which also might be important for customers, like secure negotiation, improved signing, and the encryption of the traffic. But this is currently not exploited by Sonas or V7K Unified. Okay, so it's not a roadmap, but it's the puzzle of things we think need to be focused on in the future, which is obviously performance. So you can never get enough, and even Amitai has sketched out a couple of more things that can be done, especially on the CTDB layer, to get to better scalability, like breaking CTDB apart in several daemons so that we get more parallel. So there are workloads where we see CTDB hanging at 100% CPU, and obviously you want to get rid of these situations. SMB3, I just described, further improvements in the area of Windows compatibility. Concurrent upgrades haven't been touched yet. So for our customers, it's important that actually an upgrade is concurrent. That means ideally client connection shouldn't even be broken, which does not really work with SMB2. So we are currently trying, and someone else explained it this morning, if you do an upgrade and you have a cluster, you actually want to upgrade the first half of the cluster and then the second half in turn, and operation should continue. So you fail over the connections from a couple of nodes, you upgrade those nodes, you fail back, upgrade the other half, and you're done. So we are not 100% concurrent currently. So it's hard to achieve, so we have discussed this several times. So that's obviously from an enterprise perspective, a wish that you are really able to upgrade without connection loss. Another area is RAS. So we've counted messages in syslog and passed numbers from them, and I think there's room for improvement to really get better locking, to more efficient locking. So with the ultimate goal actually to be able to fix and analyze customer issues without having to ask for recreates. So currently for complex problems, we still need to ask for recreates every now and then. But obviously, ideally, you collect the data you need to analyze while the system is running. And if a customer has an issue, he sends you some dumps and you're fine.
How do you define RAS here?
Reliability, availability, and serviceability.
Oh, okay. So logs are the key.
Logs can be, but under the same hood, I would put performance metrics. So currently, you just don't know how much throughput is actually going through Zamba. One thing that we did, which was quite easy to do, so we noticed that customers themselves, which would have root access, are quite often trying to figure out how many users are actually connected. And SMB status is a good command, yes, but not if you have 10,000 connections on the box, because you again start a traversal of the database under a lock. And so you don't want to use SMB status if you have that many connections. So what we did actually is to add an SMB control that just dumps that number from the parent SMBD regularly, and so via a cron job. So we see actually every minute how many connections there are. Because you run quite often into a situation where customer says, well, I have bad SMB performance, I have just two clients. And then you take a look at the log and see, well, according to the log, there are 500 connections here. So this happened not just once. And there need to be some more information that you get an idea of what's actually is going on the system. And finally, alternate data streams. Which currently are not supported. I mean, they are supported by Zamba. The question is, with respect to GPFS, where do we actually put them? So that's more an IBM, not really Zamba problem here. So we have a proposal to put the alternate data streams into the extended attributes of GPFS. There have been some fixes to figure out how this could be done and for some testing. But obviously, you are limited to 64K minus a couple of bytes, which are used for other things, which is probably OK for FAF icons, for zone identifiers and things like that, but which is not OK if someone puts in their 2 gigabyte video stream, what also might happen. So this is also an area where actually we need to have a solution for certain applications. So especially for Mac users. So Apple likes to put stuff in there. And also we noticed certain VMware management tools also like to put things into extended attributes. So we need to figure out how to do that with GPFS. All right, just some references. So most of these talks are actually gone. So they will provide more details on the stuff I have covered here. So on the asynchronous RPC server from Stefan, SMB3 from Michael Adam, and Matthias talked about the cross-protocol features, Amitay this morning about CTDB development, Martin about scaling IP addresses, and Alexander, so this is the only one to follow directly after this one, will talk about ACLs. And that's finally it. So thank you very much. So if there are questions, you can ask them right now, or we can talk offline. If you need to contact me. And obviously, this is a team effort, and lots of people have been involved in that.
So you gave us a lot of interesting examples of how sort of particular areas got improvements by certain tricks and technologies. You didn't publish any single number. Do you have anything to say about like where you see your performance sit, sort of in the greater scheme of things?
Not yet, because official numbers have not been generated yet. So for the V7K, there will be a new release in June, and this will be provided with white papers performance-wise and so on. So I can say, just to give you some idea, we have mainly been on the benchmark side working with Spec SFS, which is SMB1, but which was good enough to give Amitei a big headache on the CTDB side.
Well, it's not just SMB1, it's also streams that no one would ever experience again, like in a modern data center, but keep going.
Okay, so basically we got a factor of 2.5x in there from where we started.
Just for my edification, the store-wise V7000, what kind of interfaces do you have on there, like in terms of network interfaces? It's multiple 10 gigs, or what is it?
It's multiple 10 gigs, yeah. 14 gigs should be on there.
Thank you.
Other questions?
On one of the first slides, you showed us the wishes of the Windows users. Are everything fulfilled?
Not quite sure. And obviously not. So you probably never will get there. And someone even talked about back-to-back compatibility yesterday. So the question is, when are you done? I think the examples I pointed out are valid examples. And so, for example, if you're an administrator of a big university, you don't want to get called every day.
Normal stuff is working and everybody's happy from the user side.
Yes, except for
ACLs are everything, group memberships are everything fine. Everything is really good.
Well, what is it really? It's a mapping that has compromises somewhere. Mm-hmm. So NFS4 ACLs look like look like Windows ACLs, but the semantics is different. So Alex will tell us more about that. And obviously, you will never get to 100% compatible.
Okay.
Mapping. And there are compromises starting with the order of deny entries and stuff like that. So you will never get to 100%. So from experience, I can say that we are getting less complaints as we go along. So we are doing Zonas now for 5.5, nearly 6 years. And the complaints of things where things don't work as in Windows, it's reducing. That's for sure. But 100%, of course, you will never reach.
That's it.
Yeah.
Thank you. Any other questions, comments? If not, thank you, Ingo.